SWR Kultur. Lesenswert Magazin.
In November 2013, a typhoon called Haiyan hit the Philippines with wind speeds of almost 200 miles per hour, which is more than 300 kilometers per hour. It was one of the worst tropical cyclones ever recorded. One of the cities that was almost wiped out was the city of Tacloban on the island of Leyte. Author Daryl Delgado now lives in Quezon City in the Greater Manila area, Metro Manila, but she's originally from Tacloban. She traveled to her hometown shortly after the typhoon, and so did the main character Anne in her novel Überreste, Remains. Daryl Delgado is now with me in the studio. Good afternoon, Ms. Delgado. Welcome.
Hi, Katarina. Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
As I mentioned, you're from Tacloban. Today you live in Quezon City. You flew to Tacloban yourself in November 2013, right? What did you experience there?
Yeah, so at the time there were no flights. No planes were operating because the airport was washed out. The control towers were taken out, so there were no flights going into the island. I think there were some military planes already that were allowed to go there, but no commercial planes. I was actually in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia when the typhoon happened. I was working, I was doing field work. And as soon as I could, I went back to the Philippines. And my husband and I, we basically rented a bus or a big van so we could travel by land and then by ferry from Quezon City in Metro Manila all the way to Tacloban City. So you know that the Philippines is made up of thousands of islands, right? So we had to cross islands to get home.
And what did you experience on site?
Yes, I think the first thing that I remember was the shock of seeing the island drained of any color. And I think I mentioned that in the novel because that was an image that was very clear to me. So it just looked brown and it looked like it was all mud and it looked rotten. And even before we opened the window, there was just a small crack on the window and then the smell. Okay, the smell came in and then we started to see some of the bodies on the streets and just a lot of destruction, you know, trees that were upside down. It did not make sense, honestly. So it was kind of hard to make sense of where we were, what are we looking at, because things were kind of upside down and in a complete chaos. So that was what I saw when I first went back home after the typhoon.
The Philippines have always been hit by hurricanes. However, these are getting stronger and stronger due to climate change. How do you experience the storms in recent years?
Yes, because like you said, we are not strangers to storms and to hurricanes and other, you know, natural calamities. And growing up in Tacloban City, which is the typhoon path, you know, my memory of typhoons is very rich. Like I can remember every single year we knew when the typhoons were coming. So when they told us in 2013 that it's going to be a very strong typhoon, it's a powerful typhoon, I think people thought that they know what a powerful typhoon means. Maybe they thought that, oh, this must be similar to another typhoon a couple of years ago when we were children. So they have a reference, right? So, but when the actual typhoon happened, that's the only time that people realized that it was a typhoon. It was a storm that was unlike anything that they had experienced. So even for people who are used to storms, to, you know, hurricanes and typhoons, this was really unprecedented. And that has also been my experience, even after moving to Metro Manila, to Quezon City, and I still go home to Tacloban a lot, that not only have the storms gotten stronger, they've also become more frequent, more unpredictable, more destructive, and the effect on people has also, I think, been more devastating, not just in terms of like physical losses or economic losses, but also in terms of like the mental toll and emotional toll on people has also become devastating.
Natural disasters rarely occur in German literature. Maybe there's sometimes a forest fire or a snow avalanche or maybe a flood, okay. That's probably because our weathers in Central Europe are quite stable, are quite balanced, but climate change is changing that as well, like all over the world. Do typhoons occur frequently in Philippine literature, or how did you come up with the idea of writing about them?
Yes, good question. I think typhoons have always been featured in Philippine literature, in cinema, in songs, you know, in oral narratives, in folk literature. And we just take it for granted that it's just part of our natural context, I suppose. But maybe there has not been a lot that really focuses on natural, you know, disasters or the climate or typhoons as an issue, as a core issue that is all at the same time personal, economic, political, and even historical. So I'm sure if you do a survey of Philippine literature, there are so many where the typhoons and storms and natural calamities are explained or described as being part of the context in which, you know, characters live and where their lives are played out. And I don't think I'm super unique, but I am very grateful for the attention that the book has gotten. And I'm glad that people are noticing that this book is trying to do something about how nature should be talked about or how typhoons should be talked about.
Yes. Anne is a first-person narrator, and she works exactly the way journalists do. In Tacloban, she goes to the press center. She takes part in a guided tour for journalists. She needs a driver on site. She takes notes and also presents her interview transcripts in the book. For me, I rediscovered a lot of my own work and what she's doing, I must admit. Why was it important to you to incorporate journalistic storytelling into your novel?
I think the most obvious answer is that I have that same background, and it's easy for me to describe. So I made, you know, free use of the resources that were available to me. But also I liked that the character is complex. You know, the character is dealing with multiple issues, multiple agenda, all at the same time. So on the one hand, she goes to the city as an outsider, you know, an objective outsider gathering data for some kind of document, some kind of project. But on the other hand, she's not a complete outsider because she's from there originally. She has knowledge about the city, although limited. She has a relationship to the city. She has relationships to people. So already she has that kind of conflict, right? Like a conflict of interest. And also, she's not just there to do the project. She's also doing a personal project, like a personal inquiry, right? So everything is happening at the same time. I wanted to include journalistic elements, description of what that kind of work looks like on the ground, because I wanted the readers to pay attention to the fact that there are these multiple dimensions to the character that she is. She's not really a journalist, but some kind of a researcher. But also, she is just a person who is so vulnerable and who is searching for herself. And in many ways, she doesn't really know herself all that well. And then she plunges herself into this chaos. That's where the drama begins, right?
In flashbacks, we learn something about Anne's complicated family history. In between, she also talks with her sister Alice on the phone. And we learn that she flew to Tacloban to look for Manupata's daughter. Manupata is a friend of the family. Nobody knew he had a daughter. And now she's said to be dead. What I personally find so exciting about your novel is that you turn the turmoil of the reality in Tacloban into an equally torn and polyphonic, never entirely clear text, no text with clear solutions, not even in the end. What was the most interesting literary aspect for you personally when you were constructing the novel?
The most interesting was when I realized that I can do so many things within the construct, within the structure. And I always say this, when I realized or when I decided upon a structure to the novel, that structure kind of set me free. Because within the structure of the novel, I felt like I could do so many things. And because when people think of stories, you normally think of just, you know, beginning to end, beginning, middle, end. But there are so many things that happen, you know, vertically. And so you can go deep, right, and go back. Or you can go internally, you can go inward, you can also go outward, outside of the self. And I realized that I could do all of these things, and there's no limit, right? But also because the story is largely about chaos, and it's largely about the loss of control, the loss of meaning, the loss of, like, anything that's sensible. And the reason for that being something that was beyond the control of people, right? And I deliberately made things open-ended. And I wanted to interrogate the notion about journalism also and research and the limits of that work, you know, that there are things that you simply are not allowed to answer. Or there are things that maybe require a different way of data gathering or a different way of understanding. But this person, this Anne, her character is such a know-it-all. She feels like, you know, she can do so many things. She has a lot of resources at her disposal. But she then is confronted with the limits of her own self. And when she's confronted with those limits, she's forced to look at things like her family history, and the kind of relationship that she has with people, the kind of power structure that she is a part of. So, for example, Manupatar, he's a friend of the family. He's sort of a father figure to her. He's kind of a family, but in the end, he's not family. He works for them, you know, and the way he treats him, you can see in the tone when she's talking to him and she's referring to him that it's a combination of, like, there's a lot of affection, but there's also a lot of assumption that she has control over this person's decisions. You know, she tells him what to do. She expects him to follow. And when he doesn't show up where she said she should, she doesn't understand, right? When she finds out that Manupatar seems to be this person that she had no idea of, that disturbs her so much because she has a hard time dealing with things that she has no control over. And it really comes from her privileged position, her class, but also maybe her traumas, you know, growing up in that kind of a family setup.
Mm. You wrote the novel in English, but you also included many words or sentences in Waray. Waray is the language spoken on the islands of Leyte and Samar. It's also your mother tongue, isn't it? Yeah. In the German translation, the Waray sentences have been left as they are, but of course, the translation can be found in the back of the book. Why did you write the book in English, and why did you insert a few Waray words on every page anyway?
Yes, to my mind, when I was writing the book, I was writing a warai book in English. So I really wanted the consciousness of the speakers in the book, the character as a narrator, to be a warai consciousness. And I also wanted to write it for warai people. And I wanted someone from the region who, or someone who speaks the language, to pick up the book and recognize themselves or their voice in the novel. And also because part of the project of the book is language and voices. And one of the most important themes that I wanted to explore in the book is the theme of voices and who gets to have a voice, who has the right to tell their story. And I wanted to feature the polyphony, the multivocal aspect of the island. And I wanted to show that, you know, there are so many different perspectives, different voices. And I wanted to break the monopoly of Anne's consciousness in the novel. And yeah, and I thought it was just fun to expose people to different sounds, different languages. And I was thinking that if you're a foreign reader, if you're a reader who only understands English, there are actually a lot of context clues within the sentence, within the paragraph, that if you're just a little bit more patient, you will actually not need to translate those lines and just accept them as, you know, as sounds, as part of the character. So yeah, that was my intention.
The Philippines will be guest country at the Frankfurt Book Fair this fall. You are already here to present your novel, one of the most important Philippine translations into German this spring. For me, it is noticeable that there are a lot of graphic novels among the new Philippine publications. Short stories seem to be very popular as well. Do people in the Philippines still like to read novels, especially about a disaster like a typhoon, which is not a pleasant subject?
I think so. I think there is a readership. There's an audience in the Philippines. I mean, of course, our publishing industry has a lot of challenges. I mean, we are a third world country. There are so many priorities, right? And the different departments have to fight over a small, you know, a limited budget compared to other more rich countries. But as small and as challenged as our country is, there is a focus on preservation of culture and promotion of books and promotion of reading. And that's why the work that my friends and my colleagues in the NBDB, National Book Development Board, and the, you know, Commission for Culture and the Arts, you know, it's so important. So yes, the quick answer is that yes, there is a readership. And yes, I believe that people don't mind consuming novels or texts that depict hardship, that depict not just romantic and happy and fantastical stories. And I think it's important that there is that diversity of topics and diversity of materials coming from a country like ours, which is a country of very diverse people with so many languages.
Typhoon Haiyan happened almost 12 years ago, but the Philippines are still hit by hurricanes every year. When will the next typhoon season begin, and are the storms getting worse due to climate change?
It's hard to say anymore when the typhoon season begins. When I was growing up, it used to be from September, October, but usually November is when the big typhoons hit. But now you get category 4 or 5 typhoons, even during the months when it's supposed to be beach month. It's supposed to be summer month. So in the Philippines, we only have 2 seasons, wet and dry season. But now it's becoming wet and wetter seasons. Last year, we had a terrible heat wave. The summer months were so hot and they extended all through, I think, late May and even June. And these are June, July. These months are when, you know, the rain should start coming, but not typhoon. And so it's just become more and more difficult to predict. How do you live with that? And that's why I think it's really important to talk about climate at the intersection of other topics, of other issues like, you know, economics and political issues and historical issues and issues of human rights, for example, because it affects people at a very, very deep level. And like you said, Typhoon Haiyan happened, 12 years ago. Some people are still living with the damage, with the consequence of that typhoon. People never really recovered. So people who lost their livelihoods never really recovered their livelihoods, are still, you know, just trying to survive. And year after year, you know, something comes and upends their life. So some people say that climate is an equalizing force, right? It affects all of us. That's true, but it also is a force that magnifies inequalities because it affects us in different ways, right? It affects women in different ways from men. It affects children differently from adults. It affects poor people differently from people who have resources. And when you personalize climate, the climate issue, personalize it in, you know, in a novel, in a song, in a movie, I think that's when truths can be explored in ways that they cannot be explored in, for example, journalistic reports or in weather reports, right? So, yeah, sorry, that was a very long answer.
Yes, it's true, it was a long answer, but still it's an important issue. And even if it's not good news or even if it's a heavy topic, it's told in your novel in a brilliant way.
Thank you.
The title of your novel in German is Überreste. It's translated from English by Gabriele Hefs, published by Alfred Gröner Verlag. The original English edition was published in 2019 by Ateneo de Naga University Press. My name is Katharina Borchert. You're listening to SWR Kultur. Daryl Delgado, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Katharina. It was nice to talk to you. Thank you.